Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
It's Monday morning, which means another Health Hacks here at RCR. Dr. Glenn Davies, reversalnz.co.nz is back with us. Hi, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Paul. Yeah, thank you very much.
Good to have you back. And we're talking about thyroid conditions in this Health Hacks. Dumb question. What is the thyroid? Where is it? What does it do? I'm really keen to know.
Okay, well, they're not dumb questions at all, of course. So thyroid is part of the endocrine system, meaning the glands of the body, and it produces predominantly the thyroid hormone. So right. First of all, the thyroid gland sits in the front of the neck, sort of down below your Adam's apple, sort of partially tucked in behind the clavicles, and it's shaped like a capital H. And then sitting in behind it's these two other glands called the parathyroids, and they're responsible for controlling calcium. So why is the thyroid gland important? So the thyroid gland can be underactive or it can be overactive. So a really good analogy for thinking about the underactive and the overactive thyroid gland. For underactive hypothyroid, think about a toad. So they're cold.
Okay. Yep.
They're kind of maybe a little bit sluggish. They take a long time to warm up. They might be a little bit fat. That's a good analogy for hypothyroidism. And for overactive thyroid, think of a hummingbird. And think of people sitting on the toad to hummingbird spectrum. So the hummingbird's going at 100 miles an hour, might be a bit anxious, heart's racing, everything's sped up, tends to be quite light and on the skinny side. So a good analogy. And what does the thyroid mainly do? It's controlling your metabolism or your metabolic rate. So the toad to the hummingbird scale.
Okay, I've never thought of that spectrum before. Thank you. Why is it in the location that it's in? Do we know?
No.
Because it's an interesting place,
isn't it? No one's
ever
asked me that, Paul.
No, I just wondered because it's kind of the body's big, but this is very sort of, I guess, a complicated part of the body, the neck?
Yeah, no idea. I really don't know. Although it is in relation to the pituitary gland, which sits between your eyes. And when the ear, nose and throat specialists or the neurosurgeons try to remove it, they go up through the nose, so they break through the bones of the skull behind the nose. So it sort of sits, at the top of the nose between the eyes there. And then that also relates to the hypothalamus, which sort of sits in the center of the brain. And they all communicate with each other, and it sets up this biofeedback system where the pituitary talks to the thyroid. So that produces thyroid-stimulating hormone. And then in response, the thyroid produces the thyroid hormone, which feeds back to the pituitary and turns off the production of the thyroid-stimulating hormone. So you can see if you've got overproduction of thyroid hormone, you stop making it. And then if you've got underproduction, you make more. So that's the simple part of the feedback loop. And of course, all these hormones talk to each other. So then the thyroid interacts with the adrenal and, it's a pretty complicated system. If you had to invent it from scratch, we wouldn't have a chance.
You see it up on the whiteboard. Yeah. I think you answered the question, though, because of all those interrelating, bits of equipment.
But maybe not, because the hormones travel through the blood. They sort of have the ability to access, wherever you are. And every cell of the body needs the thyroid hormone. So I don't know. Should we claim that we have answered it? But I'm not sure.
How do you know you've got an issue with the thyroid, Glenn?
All right. So And sort of my practice, the main way that people would present with an underactive thyroid, hypothyroidism, would be with fatigue. And probably the main way that people would present with an overactive might be with palpitations. But, because the underactive can cause a whole lot of symptoms, fatigue, weight gain, cold intolerance, depression, dry skin, constipation, it could be any of those presentations. And then the overactive, that might be weight loss, heat intolerance, palpitations, anxiety, tremors or shaking or sweating. So, again, think of the hummingbird and the
Yeah,
toad.
on the spectrum.
The spectrum, yeah.
What causes the issues? Do we know?
Yeah, some of it. So hypothyroidism, the traditional cause was an iodine deficiency, and that was largely corrected by adding iodine to salt. So iodized salt, but we're now getting this new phenomenon with people moving away from the iodized salt because particularly of the concern about the microplastics in the salt where it's being concentrated from salt water, and moving more towards the Himalayan or rock salts, which may or may not have iodine added. So
Okay.
we may start to see iodine deficiency come back again. So that's one of the causes of hypo. Of course, if someone's had their thyroid removed, if they've had radiation to their thyroid, but one of the ones that sort of isn't listed in the textbooks is the insulin resistance.
Okay.
People over-consuming sugar and carbohydrates, leading to overproduction of insulin and then insulin resistance. I think that's one of the main causes of modern hypothyroidism.
Amazing, we so often come back to that.
Yeah, you've probably noticed that it's the main theme of what I talk about, and it's because insulin resistance probably underlies the vast majority of the chronic health conditions that we're dealing with in the Western world. And that's why I'm banging on all the time about this issue of overconsuming sugar and ultra-processed foods because it's leading to this epidemic of insulin resistance, which is causing so many of these conditions.
So, has there been an uptick in thyroid issues after iodized salt? Because that would have been a big change. When did that come in?
I didn't research that exactly, but I think it's sort of in my mother's or grandmother's
Yeah,
generation.
that's my
Yeah,
sense. Yeah.
it goes back, I guess, 70 to 100 years. And it was goiter. It was very, very common for people to have the enlarged thyroid gland, the lump in the neck, that
Okay.
presented as
Yep.
a goiter. And that was very, very common back before iodized salt.
So, can you track issues with thyroids today, people's thyroid gland, with the what we're just talking about and have talked about so often here with insulin resistance? I mean, if you plotted it on a graph, would you see something?
I've never seen that graph made. I would predict absolutely yes, but I haven't seen that. But because all of these chronic health re conditions relate to insulin resistance, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
So what to do? It's dietary again, right?
Yeah, that's part of it. So let's talk about the hypothyroidism. If you are diagnosed with an underactive thyroid, and that would be based on blood tests. So there's two or three blood tests that are commonly done. One's the thyroid stimulating hormone. You'll recall we talked about that being produced in the pituitary. And think of that as the jockey. And the jockey is whipping the horse, which is the thyroid, to make the thyroid produce the thyroxine. So if
Yep.
you've got an underactive thyroid, you'll see a lot of thyroid stimulating hormone. The saying, flogging a dead horse. So the
Yep.
jockey, the pituitary, is whipping the horse really, really hard, but the thyroid's not producing enough thyroxine. So we see a high TSH and a low thyroid hormone. And there's two thyroid hormones, T4 and T3. Now, interesting points here. T4 is the pro-hormone or the inactive form, and T3 is the active form. Now, we only test TSH and T4, and it's a special requested test to test T3. But what it it implies is that everybody can convert T4 into T3, and that's not actually the case. There are people who struggle to make the conversion of the inactive hormone to the active. So it is possible that you have a normal T4, but you could effectively be hypothyroid because you're not making that conversion. And in a little bit of time, we're going to talk about the different forms of thyroxine. Or we could do that now, actually, because
sure. Yeah.
If you've got an underactive thyroid, you will be prescribed or thyroxine or Synthroid or levothyroxine. That is T4, and that is the standard prescription for an underactive thyroid. But what I see over and over again is that people aren't converting the T4 into T3, and you actually need to prescribe them T3 or another product which is called whole thyroid. So you can get T3. It is on prescription. It's called liothyronine, and that's the active form. So if you are someone on thyroxine and you don't feel you've got your energy back, it's worth trying the T3 or the liothyronine. But there's a little bit more to this story. There's another product which is called whole thyroid extract. And basically what they've done is they've taken a pig's thyroid and they've basically desiccated it, turned it into a powder, and put it into capsules. And there's not just the two thyroid hormones, there's about 9 thyroid hormones. The T4 has to be converted into all of them. And there's also calcitonin, which is responsible or partly responsible for calcium. You know, so this whole thyroid is often the way that people will go if they don't feel the T4 is working. It's made in the compound lab. It's not on funded prescription, but I use that product a lot, and people tend to feel much better. And you kind of think about it, you know, T4, that's pretty rough and ready, and it'll work for most people. You could use a combination of T4 and T3, but if you sort of want the bee's knees, you'd go for the whole thyroid. And I heard someone say one of the greatest errors made in medicine was stopping whole thyroid and changing to the synthetic pharmaceutical T4. And there may be some truth in that.
Okay, so most animals have a thyroid.
You're testing me a lot today, but I would say possibly
curious
all
questions.
All animals, yeah. Certainly all mammals would, yeah.
Yeah, mammals, yeah. All right, how expensive is that, just for people who are thinking?
Most of these compounded pharmaceuticals are more expensive to the client, but not necessarily more expensive full stop, because remember right. that the government subsidizes very heavily all of our funded medicines. So if you compared the actual cost, it may not be that high, but in terms of you and I taking a prescription to the pharmacy, yep. maybe $5 compared with 50, 60, 70, 80 that per month. That
mind you, if it gives you that sort of relief or that sort of effect, it's still money well spent, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially if it's things like your energy, your vitality, your enthusiasm, your sharpness, you know, weight gain. If it's all these issues, then they're pretty important.
Another question, why isn't it funded like all the others if it works really well? Because surely that's the benchmark. It works.
Yeah, it's not made by the pharmaceutical industry, and you know it's the medicines made by the pharmaceutical industry which are funded. And you'll notice that, you know, alternative, complementary, herbal, compounded medicines, they're not.
The real problem, that isn't it?
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. And I can certainly see how the argument is created for it only to be the pharmaceutical ones. The pharmaceutical industry products tend to have evidence that is presented as reliable. And we could have a show just is that information manipulated? But if you're responsible for the taxpayers' money, you'd want to be able to say, I've made this decision to fund this medicine based on robust evidence. And I think we would all expect that.
Yep. Yep.
It would be great if Pharmac considered some of these other products for people in this particular situation where they're not converting the T4 to T3. That would be wonderful, but they might say that the evidence base is not as strong, because it costs millions and sometimes billions of dollars to do these clinical trials, and the manufacturers of compounded medicines, herbal medicines, they just don't have that kind of money to do the clinical trials which Pharmac would require.
What's wrong with, yeah, it seems to help a lot of people.
I mean, I certainly see the arguments both ways. I would love to see the whole thyroid funded, but I doubt that will ever happen.
Okay. Where do you want to go now with this?
Well, let's go to hyperthyroid. So a lot of people get confused by hypo and hyper. Hypo, think low. Oh, it's got all the O's in it. And
The toad.
hyper, over, over, hyper. So this is an overactive thyroid. Here's a hummingbird. This is often an autoimmune condition. So the immune system stimulating, overstimulating the thyroid to produce too much thyroid hormone. Graves' disease is the main one. I think it's named after Dr. Graves, not because it puts you in the grave.
Good.
And it's an overproduction of thyroid. And the other one that's quite interesting is Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Oh.
I presume named after Dr. Hashimoto, presumably a Japanese physician. And this is a little bit more complicated. In Hashimoto's, initially you get an autoimmune stimulation of the thyroid, but that leads to the thyroid burning out, and then you become hypothyroid. So it's a little bit more tricky. The Graves' disease is there's a medicine called carbimazole, which will block the ability of the autoantibodies to stimulate the thyroid, and it will often keep it under control. But some people are offered radioactive iodine. It's a drink that will, the iodine goes to the thyroid, it's taken up by the thyroid, it's attached to a radioactive isotope, and it basically will destroy the thyroid. And then you have to go on to thyroid hormone. And sometimes there's thyroid surgery. But you know how at the start I mentioned those parathyroid hormones, the four parathyroid hormones that sit in behind. It's actually very, very, very delicate surgery to remove the thyroid but leave the parathyroids behind. So
Okay, yeah.
there's a lot of potential risk in the surgery. There's issues with taking radioactivity, of course. And there's also issues with long-term use of carbimazole. So it really comes back to what's overstimulating the thyroid in the first place, and we don't have good answers to what's causing these autoimmune conditions.
So a very steady hand required in the surgery.
Not to be done after a late night out.
No, or too much caffeine or something.
So the hypothyroid, the underactive, that tends to fall in the domain of the general practitioner. They're largely dealing with that. The hyper is often referred on to hospital specialists and has clear sort of pathways. Back to the hypothyroid, the underactive, there's this condition called subclinical hypothyroidism where you look at the thyroid stimulating hormone and it's in the normal range, and you go, this person's fine. But we've had this discussion before about normal ranges. The normal range, all that you do is you take, let's say, 100 people from the community, you lay a standard bell curve over top of that. And anyone that's done statistics up to Form 5 will know about the bell curve. Then you take three standard deviations from the mean in either directions. And if you're outside of those three standard deviations, you're abnormal. But the likelihood is that some of the people within that 2 to 3 standard deviations may have symptoms, yet they won't trigger the red that comes up on the report. So
Yep.
when people have symptoms of hypothyroidism and they have a thyroid stimulating hormone that's slightly high, and I use the figure of two. The normal range is 0.5 up to 4.5. I think if it's above two and people have fatigue or weight gain or they're feeling cold, I would probably give them a trial of thyroid hormone to see if they feel better. So this is the whole issue of subclinical hypothyroidism, often missed. And I think one of the issues with medicine is they're dealing with disease, but in the area that I work in, I'm dealing with wellness, and there's this gap in between people not feeling completely well, but equally not having a disease defined as being outside of the normal range. So
Right.
that's where, this idea of trial of treatment to see if you feel better is probably warranted.
So you sort of tweak it as you go.
Yeah, and we listen to people. Generally people know when they're not feeling well, they know when something's not quite right. And it's sort of our job to sort of be the detective and find out what that is, and to be a little bit creative in that space in between disease and being completely well.
Yeah. Male versus female. Is there any propensity either way for a thyroid condition, or is it about evenly split? How does that work?
I haven't researched your question, but I get the feeling it's more common in women than in men.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. And then there's a couple of other sort of less common issues that affect the thyroid. So there's the goiter that we mentioned earlier, the enlargement, and we talked about the iodine deficiency. Interestingly, we give all pregnant women folic acid and iodine, and that's too because the thyroid requires more iodine during pregnancy.
Yeah,
So that's the logic of using the iodine during pregnancy. You can get nodules in the thyroid. So, just like you can get lumps or nodules in any organ, you can get it in the thyroid. But interestingly, in the thyroid, you can feel it. So there's a lump in the neck. And what's interesting about a lump on the thyroid is it moves when you swallow. So that's how you distinguish it from a
okay.
standard lymph node. Moves when you swallow. And of course, that's quite concerning if you see it in the mirror or you
You
notice
think
it.
you've got something, yeah.
Yeah. And thyroid cancer is actually very rare, but benign non-malignant thyroid nodules are very common. So you would end up getting an ultrasound scan. The ultrasounds are now quite sophisticated and they can indicate, it's called a T-RAD score, and it's scored 1 to 4, and it gives people an indication of whether it's likely to be a cancer or not. And those low scores are just followed up with another ultrasound. The high scores, you have a fine needle aspirate, so a needle stuck into it. You suck on the end of the syringe, look at that under a microscope, and that will largely tell whether it's cancer or not.
Okay. Those are always scary moments. I
Yeah,
know.
they always are. Another topic is thyroid antibodies. So they're called anti-TPO and anti-thyroglobulin antibodies. You see them in both the Hashimoto's and the Graves' disease. So that's what defines the autoimmune thyroid conditions. And that's basically it with the thyroid.
I take it you get it sorted. It doesn't like lower life expectancy or anything like that. You can kind of get beyond it.
You will have it treated either way.
Yeah.
So yeah, underactive thyroid, you'll be on one of those three forms of thyroid replacement. The overactive would be dealt with by one of those methods, the medicine, the radioactive iodine, or surgery.
Is there anything hereditary about it?
Yeah, good question. It used to be thought that the goiter was hereditary, but I actually think that was largely iodine deficiency. The thing about that question, is it hereditary or not hereditary? We all have the genes to do absolutely anything that the body can do. In fact,
Yep.
we still have genes to grow tails. Not many of us have tails,
Last time I
but
looked, no.
yeah. But the important thing is the gene turned on or not turned on? And that's really the key issue, and that's where the lifestyle medicine, all of the things that we're eating, we're exposed to, the toxicity, our stress levels, our sleep, all of these things that I talk about all the time within lifestyle medicine, that is what determines whether the gene is turned on or off. Now, I think you're going to have to try pretty hard to turn the I want to grow a tail gene on, but to turn on some of these cancer genes or other genes, I don't think is overly difficult. And that's why we have to always be thoughtful and careful about our lifestyle.
Good to catch up with you again, Glenn. Thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.